Welcome to Hot D, the officially unofficial podcast for House of the Dragon on HBO. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And tonight we're talking about season one, episode six, titled The Princess and the Queen. It's the instant take. Aaron, how did you feel about this episode?
Oh, man. I thought this was an incredible episode. I'm kind of like getting my footing and like seeing how they're playing jazz with this week's material and how they're playing with the timelines. I thought that instantly the Emma D'Arcy, Olivia Cooke era, by 15 minutes in this episode, it's not that I forgot about the great work of the younger actors that came before, but these are just manifestly the same fucking character on trajectories that I clearly understood, watching this episode. And it was really interesting to see a lot of the themes from the book and a lot of the, you know, like, again, the bear history kind of shown with like color and like just really feel, I just really feel bad for Viserys, man. And I feel bad for the kids, because I got the feeling like in the first half of this episode, these kids would be okay and everything would be fine if the adults weren't laying their petty jealousies on them.
Yeah, we kind of talked about that last time, how this is, such a shame.
And from a lore perspective, one of the hottest theories has been, did Larry Strong burn his brother and father alive in Harrenhal to some political end? And as soon as he started talking to the queen, and she's like, who will rid me of this meddlesome hand who has the lealest service in the realm? I need someone more self-interested in myself. Was proven to be, I was like, wow, gasping. Yeah, I thought this episode was incredible. I think this is clearly my favorite. I love seeing the size of Vhagar. I love seeing, like, that's not exactly how it happens in the book, but Laena's death is the most metal version of what happens to her in the book. I thought that was fucking cool. I really thought it was cool how, I don't know that Daemon, this is the wife that he wanted, but he clearly loves and respects her, even though he is kind of dismissive and patronizing to her too. Both of those things I think can be true. I thought it was incredible. I got the opinion from our brief pitter-patter pre-podcast chatter that you might not feel the same way. Let's talk about that. What do you think?
It might not be the wife he wanted, but it's clearly the only wife he could get it up with. I feel like we got to talk about the kids at some point, but all the kids. The kids aren't all right, Aaron. They're not all right at all.
They're not really.
So here's my opinion on the episode. I'm very torn on this one because, boy, there were a lot of people I liked coming out of last episode. Uh-huh. And they did a whole hell of a lot to make me just hate every single character across the board. Like, name one who's likable. Lionel?
Harwin.
Mostly?
Harwin and Lionel died.
Well, Harwin's fucking boots dead, on. So good. Good luck liking his corpse, I guess.
You don't like... Okay, I gotta say, I thought the opening of this made me Rhaenyra very likable and made Alicent very hissable. I was kind of surprised at how hard they leaned there, because Rhaenyra, like, you know, victorious on the womanly field of combat, the birthing bed.
I was gonna ask you, was that a battle scene?
Yeah, right? Uh-huh, and then, like, you just admired the courage that her character shows there. And yeah, and then to be summoned by this imperious queen and her, I guess you're supposed to understand that this is some kind of, like, you know, veiled threat. Like, she might hurt the child. Seems like that's what Rhaenyra was worried about. Mm-hmm. And, like, she's learned and grown so much because, like, you know, this lord is, like, you know, trying to, like, waylay her as she's dripping blood through the Red Keep. And she's courteous to him. And, you know, I was like, wow, that's the old Rhaenyra wouldn't do that. The old Rhaenyra would said something shitty to him and probably turned a potential ally into. And the way she offered that marriage proposal to the queen, I actually really came away from this episode liking Rhaenyra more than I ever have. I know he's a shit, but I also like Daemon, man. He seems like he's a good dad. I'm gushing. I really like this episode.
Yeah, yeah. So the stuff that I didn't like about Rhaenyra was the way she treated Laenor in a lot of cases. It comes around by the end. Really? I think yes, I'm more on board with her. She allowing him to take Quark, I'm going to call him because I forget his name.
Carl.
King with a Q, I think, is his name.
I think it's just pronounced Carl.
Carl, okay.
Yeah, like the Walking Dead, Carl.
Yeah, allowing him to take Carl to Dragonstone with him, I think, is a sympathetic move and one that's well-placed, given what she's just experienced. I don't hate Rhaenyra. I found her a little bit dislikable with the way she related to Laenor in the middle of this episode, but yeah, everything else with her is good. She comes around by the end. But man, they have done just a real 180 with Alicent. I used to feel for Alicent. I used to try and put myself in her shoes and say, boy, what a really hard position she's in. And she just is her own worst enemy now. She's declared war on the crown, and she's going to see that through all the way to the end, whether she's offered opportunities out of this. Like, she's offered the perfect olive branch, the perfect out for this, in my opinion, and she refuses to take it because she was lied to as a teenager. How fucking petty is that?
I don't know, man. I think she's a genuine believer in Otto theory of you going to die when Rhaenyra takes the throne.
But if anything, marrying her son or her daughter to one of Rhaenyra's sons
might save that
daughter.
Put a
big target on Rhaenyra's back,
of her sons,
right?
Though, would it? How?
Because if the realm wants a Targaryen on the throne, I guess they got to. Well,
yeah.
I don't know.
Talking about marrying
maybe
her
doesn't.
Daughter. And no, yeah. Look, I think they're. So what I liked about Alicent is I like how petty her and Sir Criston are. Like, you can tell that they are just a, like, fucking haters club with the capital HC. And just, like, Rhaenyra can do, like, and like, I like how Sir Criston Cole got a little carried away. He dropped the the C unit, and he's like, oh, my God, I've besmirched my cloak again. Clutch some pearls, you fucker.
Dude, but, the Hound never apologized for using the C word.
He didn't. And that's why we loved him. But and he only directed that cannon where it was richly deserved. It seems to me that's fair. The other key word to its use.
Use it against Joffrey.
I liked Alicent because, like, clearly she is just calcified into this paranoid thing that her father made her, which she is entirely could entirely be true. And she's infecting, like, this is like generational trauma. Like, she has been kind of abused by her father in terms of, like, you know, you got to do anything for the family. You got to do anything for this. You got to, you know, don't you see, you fool? You're too kind. She does that exact same speech to her son, Aegon, in this episode.
Doesn't that get her to her end? Here's the thing I've never understood about the Hightowers. They seem to not want to play the long game. They seem to not be willing to say, hey, the realm is either going to... The realm is not going to fight for, I don't know where I'm going with this, but, like, if they could get their family, their house onto the throne by marrying into it. And I don't know what their problem is with that. They seem to want to do it the way they want to do it.
I think that you just, like, you either buy into the fact that Rhaenyra, whether she wants to or not, once she ascends the throne, will have to kill Alicent's children. If not Alicent herself, it will just be demanded of the lords. You know, it's like, look, we're backing a woman. That's already crazy enough. But the biggest threat to your rule is these people, and you will spare them. Like,
but is the realm going to tolerate that? Like,
tolerate what? Then put like,
tolerate killing what they perceive as the true heir? Like, that's the thing. Like, if she goes off and starts killing
those
kids.
So here's let's put our real politic hats on.
Mm-hmm.
Viserys dies.
Yeah.
Rhaenyra is instantly declared the queen, but there's going to be some faction of lords that says, fuck no, we want Aegon, especially now that we've seen how this has played out, where Rhaenyra's kids may be bastards. Look at how fucking Targaryen these other kids are. Holy shit, they're dragon. Aegon's a dragon rider. Like, there's going to be lords that back him, and whether Rhaenyra wants it or not, Aegon wants to or not. Because, like, he's, like, said,
yeah,
like, hey,
that points
well,
right on.
She's like, well, your brother, you know, you'll fuck up a succession. He's like, no, I won't. She's like, psh, fool. Yes, you will. Because, like, the lords will put him on their shoulders, whether he wants to or not. He'll either die or he'll be used as a pawn. So it's like, I think the idea is, like, some of this shit is just going to happen. and it's going to be who survives. And Rhaenyra's path to surviving is putting Allison's kids to this sword. I think there's a way
and
to
yet
do
she
this.
She hasn't done it in 12 years. She's just waiting for Viserys to die so she can.
I think if Otto hadn't fucked with this and he had just let the families get really close. Mm-hmm. And like the Valyrians and the Targaryens and the Hightowers stayed together and got behind Rhaenyra as a house, this would have been fine. But that's like saying, you know, if your car only had two wheels, it'd be a motorcycle. Well, yeah, a lot of things would be different if your car only had two wheels.
Well, who's the stopping party at this point? It's Allison.
At this point, I don't think Allison, like, she's drank the Kool-Aid. She'd have to undrink it. And, you know,
that's
like,
what I'm saying. Yeah.
This whole thing can never be bread again.
Yeah. And this is all her fault at this point. Like, this marriage proposal seems like the perfect way to wed the two houses. Eventually, the two houses will become essentially one. You'll have your offspring on the throne, and bingo bango, you're part of the crown. Like,
yeah, I just think that you are sounding like super naive from a medieval standpoint. Like the idea that
because
that's the thing. It's like, no, you are 100%. You're 100% right. And I think if everyone gotten together in the previous generation and made that happen, it would be fine. But they didn't, and now Allison's bought totally into the like poison everything. Make sure Rhaenyra can't have any success. Make sure she has Max. But all this to say, the other thing I really liked about Allison and what I thought was a grace note of was that she still has the capacity to be shocked by the level of real politic that Larry Strong has got on display. Right? She is not so evil that she can't be like, holy fuck, what have I become in my quest for allies? So
yeah,
like,
I don't know. I don't think she was going to hurt Rhaenyra's baby. I don't know why she would. She's got two other children who are going to take the throne, whether you kill this third born or not.
So
like,
she's
the third born's
not
in line.
Paranoid
on.
One. I thought, the whole time she's holding that baby, I thought, even though I've read the books and I know it can't happen, I thought she might be like, oh, I drop. Just the way,
but what's the
like,
point?
Like,
just
the fact
to
that
thin
Sir
the
Kristen
blood,
Cole,
the bloodline a little bit, like
what Sir Kristen Cole got away with his bullshit. Are you saying that if Allison just accidentally dropped that baby and said, "Oh my God, I'm so sorry, I'm so shocked," in front of Viserys, that Viserys would what? Put her to the sword?
No, I'm not saying that at all. What I'm saying is, what's the gain by dropping
just
this baby?
Just to fuck with Rhaenyra.
Oh, Jesus.
Because let me ask you this.
Then this is all over a lie
that
she was told as a teenager? How fucking petty is Allison? Yeah, they made me hate Allison.
Why did Allison? Well, I mean, and I think years, because like in the books, Allison's not a very likable person. And she started a lot fucking sooner. But like, I want to say, like, why would Allison ask for Rhaenyra's child in a condition where she'd almost guarantee that Rhaenyra would not be there?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
I don't know.
Again, was that probably just because you're right? I don't think she was going to, but she's doing it to fuck with Rhaenyra.
Sure.
So I don't know. I thought this stuff doesn't
strike me as like Rhaenyra's. I don't know. The way they play it is Rhaenyra is concerned she's going to do something physically violent to her baby, even though she has two perfectly healthy children. To say, yeah, Allison's actually not going to fuck with my kids that much.
How many healthy children do you have in this realm before you feel safe from losing all of them to some inheritance craziness, you know?
Okay, did Allison fuck with the other two? No?
Aaron,
okay, there's clearly
Aaron
a pattern
crib is
here.
Worth two in the, you know, like, I don't know. It's like, you gotta...
I think if she were going to do a lot of baby dropping, it'd probably come with the firstborn, maybe. Try and get in there early and start dropping
kids. What I think, Rhaenyra,
adults that you can't even lift, let alone drop.
What I think Allison wanted to do was get that baby and go to Viserys and be like, look, another fucking brown-haired, strong baby. You know,
okay.
and like taunt him with that, because clearly that's what she wanted to do.
She does that. Even without the baby.
I thought it was great, too. Like, Viserys, like, you know, sitting there watching his grandsons, his strapping grandsons in the yard. And he's like, see, Lionel, this is what it's all about. You know, getting these boys together, scrapping, having a good time. They're going to be fast friends. And just watch it turn to shit in front of his eyes. Oh, I feel so bad for this guy. First of all, he looks like he chose the wrong grail. last episode. I think that's what he did. He grabbed the wrong grail from the wine table and drunk, and he turned into fucking the dude in The Last Crusade.
Yeah.
And I think his arm's gone now. I got to rewatch it, but I think his chat. Can I get a back? Can I get a yes, sir? Or a no way?
I didn't even notice.
Arm's gone. No,
couldn't tell you. But yeah, no, I feel bad for him. He's the character that I still like
because he just wants his. He just wants his fans. Still, the only thing he wants, like him kissing his dead wife's ring at the end. All he wants is his family to be together. And that's consistent in the book. Like, this is his joy. He wants these boys to get, like, this was all, like, yeah.
Mostly people are saying, yes, his arm is gone.
Okay.
Yeah, he's in bad shape. He's gotten much older than the rest of the cast. How much time do you think has passed? About, like, 12 years is my guess?
I'm thinking 10.
Well, I assume the oldest of the...
Because Aegon was 3.
Yeah, but I'm thinking the oldest of Rhaenyra's kids is probably 10. So you say like year or so for pregnancy.
A lot of people have remarked at how Finn Wolfhard, Targaryen, the Aegon looks, and Kim started calling him Mike Targaryen.
It's the
funniest fucking thing ever. Anyway, Mike Targaryen. I think he looks about 14.
Him and Frank really hang out.
Yeah, Mike. Frank Valerian. Fast friends. They're like Aegon and fucking Boros Baratheon of old. I forget what the guy's fucking name is. What were we talking about? Something with Mike Targaryen.
Frank always destroys the flow of conversation.
Oh, god damn it. It's too funny. There's still lots of hot D to talk about. We'll be back right after the break.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was, and those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim, order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar, then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
House of the Dragon Season 2 is coming up sooner than you think. And to get us all back in that Leal state of mind, Aaron and I have teamed up with Maester Anthony to bring you coordinated coverage, new and old. For the next 10 weeks leading up to Season 2, Maester Anthony will be releasing an episode of his Season 1 coverage on the Hot D podcast. He originally recorded and released it exclusively on his Double Dragon podcast, so while it's retro coverage, it's almost certainly new to you.
In addition, each Friday, Jim and I will be reading the relevant sections of George Martin's Targaryen history book, Fire and Blood.
so that we can compare and contrast it to that week's episode of Hot D Season 1. So grab a copy of Fire and Blood and read along with us if you're so inclined. Just don't read ahead unless you enjoy spoilers.
If that's not enough to satisfy your craving for fantasy entertainment, well, you're in luck. We recently watched King Arthur, Legend of the Sword, which is Guy Ritchie's uniquely stylish and anachronistic riff on the King Arthur legend. Yes, Guy Ritchie took on the most famous of all English legends and did it with huge ambitions. Sadly, or perhaps thankfully, depending on your tastes, his ambitions were cut short by meager audience interest. Join us for the podcast this Tuesday as we discuss why that might have been and whether this retelling is any good.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
FX is adapting James Clavell's best-selling novel, Shogun, into a 10-part miniseries this spring. Set in the shogunate period of Japan at the turn of the 15th century, Shogun depicts the rise of a feudal lord to Shogun, as seen through the eyes of a shipwrecked English sailor. It's loosely based on the real-life exploits of William Adams and Tokugawa Ieyasu.
Shogun has already been successfully adapted back in 1980 with a widely acclaimed miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain, featuring intricate plots, political scheming, complex characters, and thrilling action. This time, husband and wife team Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo try to recapture the successes of the novel and early adaptations while increasing the levels of historical and cultural accuracy that are often perceived as flaws of this and similar works.
Starring Hiroyuki Sanada from The Last Samurai, Mortal Kombat, and John Wick 4, with Cosmo Jarvis of Peaky Blinders, Raised by Wolves, etc., joining the truly massive cast required to bring this complex world to life. Join Aaron and I each week as we deep dive into each episode, uncovering the mysteries, the intrigue, and the glory of Shogun.
Shogun premieres on FX Hulu Tuesday, February 27th, with a two-part debut. Our podcast will release each Thursday thereafter. Get our Shogun coverage by searching for Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
And now, back to Hot D. Anyway.
Just chat, remember what we were talking about? Chat. Jump in here.
I wanted to, what do you think about the Damon situation? Because I thought his Elena has an excellent point. But also, like, this is the first time I've seen, like, pragmatic Damon win over his poetic self. Like, he seems like he wants to kind of be a dragon mercenary and stack up some gold and get some kind of, like, you know, rather than going back to Westeros and trying to scrap.
Yeah, I'm torn on Damon because, like, yeah, he's... I thought there was one point in the episode when I thought maybe Damon is happy. Damon almost looks happy right now. He's got... kind of a badass, like, super cool wife. He's got several children who, let's just point out, none of them look like him, right? So you've got Damon, who none of his kids, all of his kids look like the mother. And then you've got Rhaenyra, who none of her kids look like the mother. I think it's kind of hilarious. But yeah, I thought Damon was happy at some point, and then I realized, no, he's not actually. He's just kind of been forcing himself into that for a long time, and I don't know if it's because Viserys has cast him out, like, finally, once and for all, and if he goes back,
yeah,
he thinks
bad
he's
news,
fucking
right.
done, yeah.
Right. Yeah,
or
he's
what,
finally, but, like, yeah, there's no, but, like, Lena clearly doesn't agree with that.
Yeah.
Man, too bad about Lena, too. She seemed like such a cool character. I love her racing a Daemon on Vhagar. Fucking A. And fire, more red meat for the fireproof Targaryen truthers. Damon tanked that fireball like a... yeah. Yeah.
They are really leaning into it.
He doesn't have platinum locks. He's got titanium locks. Those things are... Yeah. He came right through that.
Through dragon
fire. Even though he's
fire.
Got a fucking burn scar in his neck, he tanks 1 kiloton dragon fire cloud. No problem.
And there's another case of someone getting an injury to the shoulder. Who is it? Is
got
it
lanced. He said he took a lance to his shoulder.
Yeah. I feel like they're doing a lot of shoulder stuff and a lot of fire stuff. Song of fire and shoulders.
Evan McNeil, Top Gun Targaryen. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's
a
cool,
like,
scene.
We haven't seen any dragon on dragon fights, but you guys, we're getting, I mean, they're getting us horned up for it, right? We're getting real slick and ready for this dragon combat because just them racing and fucking around is pretty fucking sweet, right? Also, I've been critical. I'll give credit where it's due. This is some good saddle work. Those people look like they were whipping around on dragons moving really fast at high altitudes with wind.
Yeah, it was better.
Yeah.
The other thing they really did in this episode is we've been talking about how compressed the location stuff has been in this show. Now, it doesn't feel like a real world because everybody's just there at King's Landing. Yeah. They've spread to the winds now. I mean, they've gone to
We're in
Harrenhal and Dorne and Pentos and Dragonstone. Like, everybody's going out to all ends of the earth. So
would be nice to have a map sequence keeping all this stuff together. Because you put a gun to my head, I couldn't tell you exactly where Pentos is on over on Essos.
Not exactly. I wonder if it's going to matter or if we should just know it's over in Essos.
I wish I knew if it was like east of the Triarchy or it's like northwest of the Triarchy. Because if they're east of the Triarchy, that means that the Triarchy kind of has a stranglehold. Like they have to go through that to get to west. Yeah. So I'll find that, you know, I'll find that out before the next podcast. There's a whole bunch of stuff that I kind of want to leave. To lean into, but honestly, I just like again. I'm just amazed at how well they're doing with this material and how they are, you know, kind of taking things out of strict chronological order, maybe to tell a little bit of cleaner with a little bit more impact. I just love that, man. There's going to be a lot of stuff. I'm going to be like, there is a look between Kristen and Lainor at the beginning of this episode that is super dark, but I'm gonna like pause it and turn my contrast way up so I can see, because I think we're talking about, you know, gigawatt stink eyes being fired there. I'm trying to look and see what else we've, you know.
Seems petty too. Look, Lainor didn't ask for this, man.
Lord Beesbury seems like he's lost a step.
Yeah, he seems either can't hear very well or he's not all there.
Maybe, starting to see some weakness in the council there, especially since the queen is like kind of trying to run the show.
Everybody else seems pretty ineffectual. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen with Lionel. I don't think he's dead, but
you don't think he's
Lionel?
Yeah.
No, I assumed Harwin died and he got out, but
he was on the other side of that door.
Yeah, they didn't do a good job like connecting the dots with where the exits were there.
Mildly interesting. I'll see if that'll work.
This is like a hotel room where your exit has to go through the neighboring room.
I don't know. They didn't
do a very good job of telling me where the exit was for him, because it looked like he was more concerned with saving
this is an assassination hit. So I guess you got to ask yourself whether the assassins just completely cocked it up or not. But yeah, like, are you ready for, after 10 years of the Lealist service, the Lealist hand after all, Lionel Strong, are you ready for the obsequious toad, Otto, to come back triumphant?
He can't, right?
That was the whole point of this maneuver.
Yeah, but surely Viserys is not going to do that. That would be stupid.
Who's the better hand candidate?
Jason Lannister? Like, literally anybody?
Jason Lannister, come on. Maybe Tywin Lannister. Come on.
Anybody,
man. Fuckboy Lannister? No way. Well, I'm just saying, like, that would be a hilarious occurrence if the queen's grand strategy that she finally bankrupted her last moral actually doesn't work, and Viserys is like, no, fuck that. I'm going to make Tywin. I'm going to Jason Lannister, in fact.
Yeah, that's the character they did the most harm to you this episode, is Larys. Larys is just a true piece of shit, huh?
I mean, but the kind of kinslaying, like, you're right. I mean, but he's kind of in that
piece of shit
Littlefinger, like, true schemer mold. And like I said, the hints were there in the books, but it was a lot of kind of like just whispers and tenuous things. And I'm loving that Ryan Condal. And again, like, I was scared about Ryan Condal, man. You look at his experience. He's got he doesn't have like what I would call AAA experience, but he's gone through the source material and found the most interesting threads and really pulled on, you know, the themes here of, like, you know, women dying in childbirth and what a dangerous place it is, this world, to be a woman, and, like, brought those themes front and center and made it super entertaining, super gripping. Like I said, that opening with Rhaenyra was as thrilling as any dragon ride or tourney, you know, head macing. I think this show's firing on all cylinders, man.
Yeah. No, I like the episode, but man.
Back half is looking strong.
I do miss the younger characters. I do miss the earlier setting because
really
I liked those people more.
Well, was, I mean, there
was still
that.
Just we as were interesting.
We were all sweet summer children.
Yeah, I want to go back.
I feel like you're the guy that's like, I just don't want to see the Civil War. What I just want these people should all.
I just
get
want
along.
Everybody to
this
get
should
along.
Be just should be Downton Abbey. It should be Downton Abbey. Only with dragons, and maybe, you know, maybe cousin Rhaenyra really hurts cousin Allison's feelings, but by the end of the episode, Lord Viserys will come there and say, "Now, girls, and you know,
share
Carson?
Meat pie, share some wine."
Yeah, Lord Strong comes in as Carson and is like, "Hoo, hoo, hoo," and sets everything to right. Yeah, that'd be not. That would be a show. I don't know if it would have much fire and blood to it, but it would be. And hell, fair. I'd watch it. I'd watch that shit.
Obviously.
All right. What should we do now? Do you have anything else you want to talk about? Shall we get to
I have a thousand things, but we'll talk about them on Tuesday.
This episode,
I feel,
man.
Like,
yeah, I'm really looking forward to watching this another time or three.
I mean, it's an ultimate table setting episode, right? This is essentially another pilot for the show. Like, they have to catch
you
up on so much stuff.
I think they did a really good job with it, because I just feel like that both of these characters are just pitched forward 10 years in time. Like, Allison is on, like, if you think about the terminal trajectory she'd be on with this kind of paranoid, like, oh my God, Rhaenyra lies about everything, and that means she must know, like, and her dad's surely telling her the other side of what my dad's telling me. And Sir Christian Cole just turning into, like, the worst Westerosi incel, like, just fucking, you know, this. But yeah, it's I thought it was almost David Simon-esque in its ability to take characters and toss them forward a decade. And for me as an audience member, catch it. But yeah. I also, to be fair, I've got the benefit of the books and, you know, seeing, like, where these connections are being made. So,
I think they did a great job. I didn't have too much trouble following.
I wonder, because, like, I thought that coming into this instant take that it would be a almost universal opinion that, like, oh yeah, we're going to be fine with Emma D'Arcy and Olivia Cooke.
Yeah,
but
not?
Maybe not. Maybe there will be some diehards, because, like I said, the previous generation did a hell of a job too, and they're all going to get 5 episodes of strut their stuff, and then we'll see where we land. But yeah, are you ready to get to the instant talk part?
Yeah, let's do
okay,
it.
Okay, before I say goodbye to everybody who's not a club member, I just want to say that send your feedback into Hot D, your long form feedback into Hot D. So hotd@baldmove.com. There's more to that address. hotd@baldmove.com for the feedback episode that will be released Thursday. We're about to do an instant talk where we go with the YouTube interface and we talk with the club members. And if you want to get on that action, support.baldmove.com. You can listen to the full archive of all the existing instant talks and join in next week live at just after 10 p.m. Eastern.